And the reason that they are losing market share is in large part because of the tariffs that they have to pay. It's making them uncompetitive on price.
A new survey says U.S. companies doing business in China do not like the tariffs. This is Friday, August 30th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. You are part of this program. Join us, please, on VOA Asia Facebook. Also ahead, China says it has rotated its troops inside Hong Kong, and that's making many people nervous. U.S. President Trump says there are plans to cut U.S. troop levels in Afghanistan. And the U.S. government introduces the Space Command, all on today's VOA Asia. U.S. companies doing business in China are still making profits there, but 81% say escalating trade tensions between the world's two largest economies have affected their business operations. That according to a survey released Thursday by the U.S.-China Business Council. With us is Doug Barry. He is a spokesman for that U.S.-China Business Council. And Doug, tell us more about this.
Yes, Ira. Well, we do this annual survey. This is the 19th year, and we do it of our member companies. There are over 200 U.S. companies that are members of the council, and most of them have operations in China.
What is being affected more than other things when it comes to business?
The vast majority of them, 97%, are profitable. And some of them are highly profitable, and they are profitable because they are selling their products to the Chinese consumer. They're, for the most part, making them there, manufacturing them in China, and then selling them to the Chinese. And a number of them are making profits in what I would say the billions of dollars. And these profits then are coming back to the parent company in the United States, where they are used to for the purposes of investment in new plant and equipment, and of course to hire more American workers and to keep more Americans on their payroll. So it's a good thing for them to be there, despite what the president has said that they should come home. The fact is, if they brought these things home, they wouldn't be selling to the Chinese consumers and buyers, and they would not be making these extraordinary profits. Now, having said that, the members also told us in the survey that about half of them are losing market share to competitors, and those competitors are either foreign competitors from Europe or other parts of the world, or they are domestic Chinese companies. And the reason that they are losing market share is in large part because of the tariffs that they have to pay. It's making them uncompetitive on price.
Give me an example, if you could, of a company, and you don't even have to name the company, and how it has affected them, the tariffs have affected them.
You know, one of the better known ones, and I don't have to name the name, makes a certain kind of smartphone. They are made in China in large part, and then they are shipped around the world, but they make about 20% of their profits worldwide from the Chinese consumer. Their market share is being eroded by competitors in that market, both Chinese companies and Korean companies and others who sell similar products to the Chinese consumer.
There was another part of the survey that deals with U.S. companies losing sales because the Chinese customers trying to sell to customers in China are not viewing U.S. companies as reliable as they once had.
Yes, that's correct. The problem is if the U.S. companies cannot deliver the products because of fear that the Chinese buyer will be put on a blacklist, for example, where by law the U.S. Company cannot sell to them, or if the prices continue to go up for their goods because of the retaliatory tariff situation, then clearly they're not reliable. And that means they will look either to their own domestic producers, they will invest in science and technology innovation to try to replace the U.S. Companies that have provided those products in the past, or they will go to third parties, such as those in Japan and Korea. And if that's the case, we may lose that market share for many years to come. And that would be a terrible blow to the U.S. companies that have been so successful there over the last 20 and more years. So the hope is that this information will, when added to other available information, make it clear to all parties that we need to get back to the negotiating table. And if the Chinese government does what it has promised by opening up the market further, by making it easier for U.S. companies to compete there on a level playing field with Chinese companies, ending the massive subsidies to their state-owned enterprises, which distort the market, then these companies, yes, they'll be happier for sure, but they'll be more likely to stay in the market, and they'll be able to do even better than they have in the past. And for the U.S., the message for the U.S. side is that these market-distorting trade barriers, and both tariff barriers and non-tariff barriers, are making it very difficult for U.S. companies to compete there. And longer term, China is going to be maybe the most important consumer market on the planet. At least for the next 20 years, and so U.S. companies need to be there if they're to be competitive around the world.
Doug Barry is the spokesman for the U.S.-China Business Council in Washington. Doug, as always, thanks so much.
Ira, thank you.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on VOAnews.com. The threat of North Korea launching a nuclear-capable missile from a submarine is real, but not imminent, say experts. That after recent satellite images displayed a docked craft with missile capability. South Korea's Supreme Court has ordered a lower court to reconsider one of the criminal charges against former President Park Geun-hye, who was forced from office in 2017 over a corruption scandal. North Korea's parliament has approved changes to that country's constitution to solidify leader Kim Jong-un's role as head of state, that according to state media. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on Facebook at VOA Asia and at the VOAnews.com website. China's military is rotating its batch of troops deployed to Hong Kong in a rotation that may be routine but is likely to strike some nerves in a city that has been embroiled in protest for the past 3 months. Ryan Brooks has more.
China's military has sent a new batch of troops into Hong Kong. That's according to Beijing's state media Thursday. State broadcaster CCTV showed troop carriers heading across the border in darkness before arriving at the People's Liberation Army barracks in Hong Kong. It was described as a routine troop rotation. The video also showed troops disembarking from a PLA Navy ship. It comes as protests in Hong Kong continue to rock the city. The angry and sometimes violent protests against the government have lasted 3 months. The timing of the troop movements are likely to strike some nerves in the city. Another major march calling for fuller democracy is planned there for Saturday. Beijing has denounced the protests, accused the U.S. and Britain of interfering in its affairs in Hong Kong, and sent clear warnings that forceful intervention is possible. Asian and Western diplomats in Hong Kong tell Reuters they've been expecting the move of PLA troops as an annual event. But they also said they'll be closely watching for any sign of increased troop numbers or unusual activity. Also in recent weeks, hundreds of People's Armed Police carried out drills in the mainland Chinese city of Shenzhen, just across the border from Hong Kong. The protests are the greatest political crisis to strike the city since it returned to Chinese rule in 1997. And one of the biggest popular challenges to Chinese leader Xi Jinping since he came to power 7 years ago.
Brian Brooks reporting, the Chinese Xinhua News Agency cited its garrison in Hong Kong as saying the PLA will make even greater contributions to maintaining Hong Kong's prosperity and stability. Analysts estimate the garrison numbers between 8,000 and 10,000 troops split between bases in southern China and a network of former British Army barracks in Hong Kong. Reuters quotes witnesses on Thursday as saying they saw significantly more activity in and around the PLA's Shek Kong military base in the rural New Territories than has been apparent in recent months. Happening now in Asia, India's two main ports said on Thursday they had been warned by the Coast Guard and intelligence officials that Pakistan-trained commandos have entered Indian waters to carry out underwater attacks on port facilities. Also, Pakistan successfully carried out a training launch of a surface-to-air ballistic missile, an exercise viewed as hostile by some in India. You're listening to VOA Asia. We are happy you're with us. U.S. President Donald Trump said Thursday there are plans to cut U.S. troop levels in Afghanistan from 14,000 to 8,600, and that American forces would remain in the country even if an agreement was reached with the Taliban to end the 18-year war. That came a day after the top U.S. military officers said it was too early to talk about the future of U.S. counterterrorism forces in Afghanistan. The U.S. has negotiated with Taliban insurgents since last year with a goal of ending the 18-year war. VOA's Lavitsa Hook reports the latest round of talks currently taking place in Doha, Qatar, seem to have made some progress.
A spokesman for the Taliban delegation in Doha says the parties are close to an agreement that would see U.S. troops withdraw from Afghanistan in exchange for a Taliban commitment not to turn Afghanistan into a safe haven for terrorists. Taliban officials were quoted as saying that according to the deal, U.S. troops would withdraw from Afghanistan within 2 years. In Washington, the top U.S. military officer, General Joseph Dunford, said it was premature to talk about withdrawal.
The operational environment would clearly change in the wake of a negotiation, but I think we'd have to make assessments. I would then make recommendations to the secretary and would have a conversation with the president.
Meanwhile, officials in Afghanistan said Wednesday that Taliban militants had killed at least 14 pro-government militia members in a terrorist attack in the western province of Herat, one of many that have taken place during the peace talks.
The current environment today, at the level of violence associated with the insurgency, I think we and the Afghans agree that some degree of support is necessary. That's why we have forces on the ground inside of Afghanistan today.
The Taliban ruled Afghanistan from 1996 until a U.S.-led coalition stepped in and removed the brutal regime from power in 2001. Many Afghans fear that a U.S. withdrawal would plunge the country into another bloody conflict. Women fear renewed bans on their education, employment, and freedom of movement.
Right now, the Taliban are against women and their achievements. If they accept women and their achievements in a peace deal, that is very good. But it is not going to be good if the peace comes without giving women their rights.
Taliban negotiators have rejected talks with the Afghan government, calling it a U.S. puppet. But U.S. officials say inter-Afghan talks are a prerequisite for any lasting peace in the country. Afghanistan's President Ashraf Ghani says he will be a tough negotiator.
The Taliban are part of this country, but they cannot determine the fate of the country. Election is a legitimate right of the Afghan people, and they must choose their legitimate government.
U.S. negotiators are hoping to reach a deal with the Taliban before Afghanistan's presidential election set for September 28th. Zlatica Hoke, VOA News, Washington.
Coming up, the U.S. Space Command is not the name of a new movie. You're listening to VOA Asia.
After you listen to VOA Asia, see it. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free and see us often on VOA Asia YouTube.
This news alert from VOA Asia. A government ministry said Indonesian police are investigating three palm oil companies on suspicion of starting fires on Borneo Island, where environmentalists say extensive deforestation has occurred to make way for plantations. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for the top stories and great features to see and share. The United States Space Command officially launched Thursday at a ceremony in the White House Rose Garden. The military is hoping the new command will improve the defense of American interest in outer space, and the administration hopes it will also lead to the creation of a new space force. Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent, and she is here to tell us all about it. Why do they need this space command, and what are they going to do with it?
Well, the president says that the United States Space Command will do a better job defending the military's ultimate high ground. He says all of the assets that the U.S. military and the U.S. government have in outer space. When you think about outer space, things that you need to do like banking, navigation, all of those day-to-day activities happen because of satellites that are in space. And the president says that those need to be defended from adversaries. He called today a landmark day, and it was a day that recognized the centrality of space to America's national security and defense.
When they say adversaries, to whom do they point?
Well, the president did not actually call out anyone in particular today, but many defense secretaries have called out Russia and China. If you go all the way back to Secretary of Defense Jim Mattis, I was with him in South America last year when he called out China's use of a ground-based missile in 2007 to destroy one of its own non-functional satellites. He said that was sending a clear message to the United States back then in 2007 that they can take out a satellite in space. Even Acting Secretary of Defense Pat Shanahan also sounded the alarm earlier this year, saying that the U.S. military isn't moving fast enough to stay ahead of China and Russia in space, and saying that the United States, even at this moment, was not capable of tracking some of China's rapid advancements in space weapons.
A lot has been made of the militarization of space. Now, I take it how the United States is putting this and placing it is that if somebody else is doing it, we have to do it as well. Is that correct?
Exactly. It all comes down to defending America's assets and the assets of their allies in space. And so what this administration wants to eventually do is take this space command and then use this as a launch pad to eventually establish a space force, as you mentioned. Now, they want the space force to be able to train and equip a group of people that would be tasked with defending all of these different assets. They're not there yet, though, because this space force, unlike the Space Command, requires congressional approval and funding, and the president does not have that yet.
Carla Babb is VOA's Pentagon correspondent. As always, Carla, thanks. This news break from VOA Asia. A U.S. Navy destroyer sailed near islands claimed by China in the South China Sea Wednesday, according to the U.S. military, a move that Beijing now condemns as an illegal attempt by Washington at maritime hegemony. The busy waterway is one of a growing number of flashpoints in the U.S.-Chinese relationships. This is VOA Asia. Bangladesh on Thursday accused Myanmar of lacking the will to repatriate the Rohingya as the spat between the countries grew over the recent failed attempt to return the stateless minority to their homes. Nearly a million Rohingya live in squalid camps in southeast Bangladesh, 740,000 of whom fled a 2017 military offensive against the Muslim minority in Myanmar. A fresh push to repatriate the refugees to Myanmar fell flat last week with no one turning up to return across the border to conflict-scarred Rakhine State. Briefing foreign diplomats in the capital, Dhaka, Bangladesh's Foreign Minister A.K. Abdul Momen questioned NAPADAW's resolve in taking back the Rohingya. Hundreds of thousands of Rohingya were seriously traumatized when the Burmese troops launched that brutal clearance operation back in 2017 that forced them to flee Myanmar for Bangladesh. Treating those suffering from mental illness because of the trauma they endured, has become a major challenge in the Bangladesh refugee camps, especially for the child survivors, estimated to be 56% of those displaced. Steve Sanford has this report.
You can hear comforting sounds of children having fun at the health clinic in Kutupalong, home to the world's largest refugee camp. But it's hard to imagine the atrocities that many of these children have witnessed when they fled the Burmese army.
At the beginning, it was like they couldn't speak because they had this horrific story, and also this troublesome when they were coming during the ways from the Myanmar to Bangladesh. So they had lots of things. But nowadays, slowly, they have the very good coping mechanism and strategies, and also we think we are working for this resilience.
The new program encourages peer-to-peer support, allowing the children to open up about what's bothering them. Games like imitating animals while introducing themselves helps break the ice, especially for the children suffering from anxiety.
We come to study here, and leaders train us with messages. First, we have to make ourselves comfortable and not be depressed. Secondly, if we are not happy or have something stuck in our head, we need to speak to adults to release it. Message three, if we need help, not to be ashamed to ask for support. We are all humans and need support. Don't hold it in. Speak out and release your mind.
Everyone has been emotionally affected by the past. For 13-year-old Mohammed Rochelle, it's important that grown-ups not yell at the kids.
I want to speak to the adults and tell them not to speak harshly to the kids because it might affect them and make them upset.
Rohingya teens who have been chosen to lead the therapeutic sessions focus on coming to terms with daily hardships without dwelling on the past.
Many children have mental health issues. They can't eat or sleep. They can only think of what happened in the past in Myanmar. Some of the children's parents were killed along with their brothers and sisters. They are depressed and traumatized.
As a new generation of Rohingya youth struggles to cope, aid groups are hoping to increase awareness and treatment of mental illness manifesting itself now and in the future. Steve Sanford for VOA News in Cox's Bazar, Bangladesh.
Secretary of State Mike Pompeo last week suggested that the Islamic State, or IS, is regrouping in Iraq and Syria. His statement comes following a major terrorist attack in Afghanistan for which IS claimed responsibility. Nadeem Yaqub reports on the threat posed by IS as it expands its influence into South Asia. For Nadeem Yaqub, Aman Azhar narrates.
In February, the U.S. touted the defeat of the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq.
Defeat of ISIS in Iraq and in Syria.
But since that pronouncement, ISIS has slowly regrouped and grown.
Obviously, ISIS has not been defeated. Right? I think we all now need to acknowledge that no sort of rhetorical dance will result in the actual military or political defeat of this organization. It can't be done by tweet. It can't be done by, you know, a press release.
And while the group has lost a lot of territory, they continue to thrive on the internet.
The primary threat that is manifesting right now is what they call inspired attacks. So ISIS has less of a pretension to come and attack the U.S. homeland. What they're using very skillfully is social media, online radicalization, recruitment, and even training videos.
And some experts are worried that the group is not only regrouping in Iraq, but also in new areas like Afghanistan.
So I think Afghanistan ranks as a pretty good soft target for, reigniting the ISIS movement.
Experts like Linda Robinson from the RAND Corporation say the Taliban could play a role in keeping ISIS out of Afghanistan.
Given a reasonable stake in the future of Afghanistan as part of a negotiated settlement, then they kind of own the problem. They will want to secure the territory for their own benefit.
Security experts also think ISIS could also be trying to establish ties in Pakistan. For Nadeem Yaqub, Aman Azhar, VOA News.
China's Commerce Ministry said on Thursday it will seek to boost pork imports and also release frozen pork, beef, and mutton from state reserves in due course to increase the supply of meat in the market. And protesters in Indonesia's easternmost region of Papua set buildings ablaze in the provincial capital of Jayapura on Thursday, forcing the state power firm to cut off electricity in some districts. State media and an executive of the utility provided us with that report. You've been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. You can download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. Find us at voanews.com. And you can talk with us at VOA Asia Facebook, as well as on our email at voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks for joining us. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stevenson, Skylar Ogden, and Keith Lane. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day and weekend.